Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the d'Amico International Shipping second quarter and first half 2018 results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Marco Fiori, CEO of d'Amico International Shipping. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for attending our conference call. As you know, we're here to comment the first quarter, second quarter, and six months results. As you can imagine, it's not a very nice picture. I'll try to be the most honest and transparent about this. This doesn't mean that there is no hope. It just means that we're going through a very, very tough market. I think that the evidence of what I'm telling you, if you look also at the results of all the people involved in the tanker space, I think everybody's going through a very difficult moment. Anyhow, if you want to start on page four. Sorry. We posted a net loss of $20.2 million in half one 2018. In the first six months of the year, we lost $20 million, versus a net loss of $6.2 million. That was the same result for last year of the half of the six months. This was due to a very challenging market, especially very, very challenging. The first, second quarter of this year has been very, very tough. Most of it came through the second quarter of these losses. Vessel disposal and leasebacks. As you know, we have been discussing of selling some ships. We are moving towards the sale of one older ship that was finalized or is going to be finalized in Q3. As we talk, speak directly of cash generation, in the first six months of the year, we did sale and leaseback that combined generated $20.3 million. Coming on the bad news, the spot TC for the six months was $11,526 in six months. Last year, same period was $12,492. There's $900 difference, which doesn't seem a big amount, but it is a big amount if you consider that we have a larger portion of the fleet on the spot market. This brings me to the next point, that our coverage TC, we had 32.3% of the fleet coverage on TC. The dollar amount of these TCs was pretty good. As a matter of fact, all the TC book has been generating an average of $14,932. We've been able to shore up some of the negative spot market, but with the 32% was not enough to generate some significant improvement. If you combine everything together, we had a combined average of $12,625 in the first six months of 2018. In the $12,625, it is the combined weighted average for the spot book and the TC book. On the market fundamentals, as we'll see later on, you see very few vessels ordered, and demolitions have been accelerating dramatically. There has been the creation of a two-tier market in which you can see very much which the Eco-MR, there was kind of a little bit of a heavier request for one-year TC that was running around $14,000 a day. Non-Eco ship was about $1,500 less. In our fleet, we've been able a little bit, having also some Eco ships, been able to mitigate a little bit the blow of this very negative market. Vessel employment, fixed TC contract between 12 and 32 months. This was all done mainly with renewals with existing customers. Everything was done at profitable rates, i.e., rates generating positive cash flow. If you turn to page five, This is the usual standard page. You can see that normally our fleet still continues to be mainly an MR fleet with 46.5 ships in the segment, 9 Handys and 2 LR1s. The remaining 4 LR1s are going to be delivered in Q3 of this year, and then there's going to be some of them to be delivered in Q1 of next year. Almost all is IMO, 71%, and these are the main figures of the fleet, which only I think interesting to add that the average age of our fleet is 7.1 years, and the segment that is still kind of a young segment, and the average age is 10.3 years. Let's go to page 7. Page 7 just gives you a little bit of a clearer picture of what I've just been saying. On the left, you have a chart with the historical for MRTCs and spot rates. You can see that there was really clean earnings that really collapsed in the second quarter. TC rates had a little bit of a negative trajectory, but however was more contained the loss on the 1 year TC. Historical MR vessels, you can see that a little bit has been picking up, but mainly we are still at very low levels. So we are in a situation where there is low levels of ships and at the same time low spot rates. However, it's interesting to comment on this, that if you go and buy a modern ship, you ask for a new building, today you talk about 35, 36 million, which is in line or probably more than what we paid for all our new building plan, talking about MRs and similar also for other ships. So we have a market that's very inconsequential, it's kind of very complex, because you have a market where you have low TCs, you have very little liquidity, but at the same time, if you want to go and build a new ship, it's still very expensive. So it's kind of a little bit mixed up. Page 8, the 1 year TC on non-eco, you can see this is a lower rate. It's been coming a little bit off. And then you have the valuation for a 5-year-old MR value. This has been holding pretty good, been moving a little bit higher, but you have also to consider that in this number, for the first time, you see there is a big jump in February. There's a big jump from February to March, because for the first time they were involved in this 5 year, going back 5 years, the first eco ships were considered in this picture. So the eco ships that we have in our fleet have been holding values better than the non-eco ships. Luckily, we have a certain number of them, all the 22 that were built are all eco, so this is a good part for us. Page 9, starting and looking at the market overview, the demand has not been changing dramatically. Product share of seaborne trade is still at 35%, so here there's no change. So another thing that is kind of interesting of this market, or kind of frustrating, is the fact that you have, like I was saying before, high new building values, no liquidity, low TCs, but at the same time you have a very constant requirement for refined products. So this has been still a good factor. Page 10, you can see that the refining has been pretty good. The throughput has been refining a lot. Refining margin has been positive. And then you can see that also the stock has been selling down at lower levels than what you had in 16 and 17. So you've seen really this big destocking, and now it's still continuing partially this destocking. Page 11, growth in refinery capacity and oil demand. There is still new projects being built or being put on paper for new refineries, mainly in the Middle East and in Asia. These are the areas where there is a bigger growth. Europe is very much subdued, so we see a lot of the growth is happening in Asia, which it is kind of positive, because that means there's going to be an acceleration of the intra-Asia trade. And I must tell you that as we speak, the Asian market is still the most resilient market where we have our ships. In the Asian market, they are going from $13,000 to $17,000 per day on a return voyage basis. So Asia has still been holding a kind of steady. Where we had the biggest collapse has been the Gulf of the United States, and probably followed by the AG that has been also there a little bit slower. Stage 12, refining margins, you can see that they've been holding where they were mainly, with a big drop in the U.S. Gulf Coast. That's probably one of the reasons why you had some fall of charter rates, especially in the U.S. Gulf Coast. And on the European side, refining capacity has picked up a little bit, very marginal in 2018, but it's still at very low levels compared to 2007, 2008, 2009. So the trend of destruction of European refining capacity is still continuing, or at least it's being steady and then will continue. Page 13, talking about oil production. It's very interesting to see that we're starting to see a pickup, especially on the global side, mainly the onshore. The U.S. has been leading very much this process, and we see a kind of something that since 2016 when started the collapse of, you saw the oil price collapsing, since then there's been a steady recovery. But we're still far away from the 582 million tons that we're doing, sorry, 582 billion probably that we're doing in 2015. Production, no big change there. You can see there's been a reduction, mainly in 2018, it still increased a little bit. The Saudis have been increasing their production. As you can see, it's very much there. The United States have been leading this increase. The United States, due to the flexibility, they've been able to do it. But then you start seeing in 2019 expected a fall of U.S. production, mainly due to reaching capacity, fields are getting a little bit more complicated for the shale oil to produce. So you see a little bit that there's been this peak expected in 2018, which will be subduing itself in 2019. And naturally, what is missing there will be requested to OPEC to increase its production. Page 14, taking an example, Latin American markets have been very important for us. You can see that Brazil is still being continuing to increase. Brazil and Mexico petroleum imports have been of kind of steady. There's been a little bit of a slowdown in Mexico, election period, so there was a little bit of a slowdown in the whole economy. But now this is over, probably they should be starting to pick up again. And the Brazil import from the U.S. instead has been remaining kind of steady, a little bit off the highs, but mainly was for political and economic reasons within the country. But so it's holding still kind of steady. Page 15, as we said at the beginning, young fleet, you can see this on the chart on the right, but especially it is the lower amount of delivery. I would like to look a little bit more in detail this part. You can see that the net growth of fleet for 17 has been of 2.8%, which is very low compared to the years where you had the double-digit increase. And you can see that also in 2018, the net increase is expected at 1.9%, and then 19 is going to be 1.7. So there is definitely a slowing down trend of delivery. And this, you can see it furthermore, because here is not only the delivery, there's also the scrapping activity. Here you can see it on page 16, a little bit more in detail, where we have been putting to side next to each other the same periods of 17 and 18. You can see that in 2018, Q1, there were only 22 ships delivered versus 32. In Q2, 18, 11 ships versus 22 in 17. And then in 17, this is too early for Q3 for giving you the exact number. But what is interesting is that the amount of demolition has been steadily increasing. As a matter of fact, you can see from Q1 17 moving up steadily until reaching a peak in Q1 18, but Q2 18 has not been much less. So you have 14 ships in Q1, 13. So at the end of the day, you have more or less, you have more ships demolished in the first queues of the first and second quarter of this year than you had all in during last year. So this is another positive news for the fact that you see less deliveries and more scrapping.
Yeah, I would like to add also that if you look at the chart in Q2 18, you actually see that there were more vessels demolished than delivered. There were 11 MRs and LR1s delivered, but there were 13 demolished.
So it's kind of a very strange market where you find a market where, in addition to everything we've been seeing before, you have a lull in this market in the deliveries, and the scrapping is outweighing almost completely the new deliveries. So you have a market at zero growth, or very marginal growth, 0.27, which is something that very seldom happens in shipping. Normally you have always growth in deliveries. In this case, it seems that in Q2 there was a dramatic halt to all of this, and this is, can be very good. Can be very good for many reasons, also because one of the reasons at the base of this, there's less and less shipyards ready to build product tankers, so the supply of vessels for sure is going to be coming down, or cannot keep to the levels that we've seen in 2008, 2009, 2010. For sure, it's coming dramatically down. New build parity curve, still very convenient to do on second-hand ships, but there is no activity or very limited activity on the second-hand. MR and LR1 orders, year-to-date 31 ships, which is a very limited number compared to the years of the growth in 2013. For the whole year was 225 ships. If you annualize the 31 is 62 versus 225, so we're talking one of the lowest numbers you had in all these years. Market overview, final slide on page 18. Here you have the seaborne volume, which is the more or less the ton mile, MR and LR1 fleet growth, and 1 year MR and LR1 TC rates. You can see that everything is at historical low, including the ton mile, which is starting just now a little bit to pick up. Contemporarily is bringing down all the other numbers, the 1 year TC for MR, for LR1, and the fleet growth at the same time is also decreasing very much so. So we're starting really to see a base here getting created. As far as the financial results, I think Carlos can give you a little bit more of a detail about it.
Yes, hello to everyone. So as usual, we start with an update on our CapEx program, which started off at 755 million, and there is 116 million left. Between now and January 19. So we have still four vessels to be delivered. One of them actually was already delivered to us in July this year. Another LR1 will be delivered in August, and then two other LR1s are going to be delivered in January 19. So the amount of debt that we will be able to draw will depend on the value of the vessels at delivery, but assuming these values do not change, we would have to invest 42 million in equity to take delivery of these vessels, and the rest would be financed through bank debt, which is already committed. So it's not an insignificant number still that we have to invest, and that is why, as you if you follow our press releases and, of course, our results and financials over the last few years, you know we have been pursuing quite a few sale leasebacks to be able to cover this residual capex, as well as, of course, the operating losses that, unfortunately, we have been generating due to the unexpectedly very weak markets in the last few years. Going on to the next page, we show the debt evolution, and we show how the gross debt to fleet market, the evolution of the gross debt to fleet market value. We take today's fleet market value and we depreciate it on a straight line basis. And the assumption, the underlying assumption of this analysis is that we will be able to generate enough cash through the operation of our vessels to cover our cash break-even, and therefore that we will not need to generate more debt to reimburse the existing debt. But if that is the case, then the outstanding debt, the ratio of outstanding debt to fleet market value will fall quite fast over the next few years. On the left-hand chart, we show how much of the payments to the banks and represent repayments or lease repayments on ongoing facilities, how much are balloon repayments or prepayments, and how much are refinancings. So I believe that is a useful analysis, a useful data for projecting our cash flows and better understanding how our funding needs will evolve over the next few years. On the following page, we show, as usual, the average TC rates over the next 3 years and also the percentage of the fleet that is covered to TC contracts. We are, as has been in the last few quarters, slightly below our target of between 40 to 60%. We did fix four vessels on TC at profitable rates for MRs in the beginning of the year, when the markets were stronger. Unfortunately, now the one-year TC for an eco vessel is at around $14,000 and $1,000 less approximately for a conventional vessel. So these rates are now below break-even. So, of course, we are not as keen as we were before in fixing vessels. But we will, of course, if the market changes, as we did in the Q1 of this year, opportunistically take advantage of this to slightly increase coverage. But we are positive on the prospects of a not-too-distant recovery, so we are not definitely looking forward to very long-term coverage. So even if we do increase our coverage, it's likely to be for relatively short periods of 1 year, possibly, and not much longer. On the following page, we show the fleet evolution. On the light blue bar, we show the vessels which are TC'd in. And we show these are the average number of vessels in the year, how these fall quite rapidly. So a number of our TC-in vessels are actually short-term TC-in vessels. It is possible that some of these contracts will be renewed depending on our liquidity position and on the prospects of the market, but we will only do so if we feel we have the possibility of sustaining a greater exposure to the spot market, and if we are very convinced of the imminent recovery. On the right-hand side, we show our exposure to the spot market. So although the fleet is decreasing over the next few years, we actually slightly increase our exposure to the spot market because of the decrease in the TC coverage in 19 and then in 2020. So we have on average in 19 and 20 around 40 vessels exposed to the spot market with a sensitivity between $14 million and $15 million per annum for $1,000 per day change in the TC equivalent rate. Going on to the next page, we show, as usual here, the ratio of our net financial position to fleet market value. And this is slightly worse now than it was at the end of December because of the losses we generated and because of the decrease in asset values for our older vessels. While since then, our younger vessels, as we have seen in the first part of the presentation, continued, the vessel values for the younger vessels continued rising. we did invest $44 million in the first semester in for installments for our new buildings. We did also close one sale lease back for the High Freedom. The net cash proceeds from the sale lease back and from the disposal of the vessel with disposal and time charter back of the vessel in the first half of the year generated $20 million in cash for us. Going on to the following page, we show our P&L results, the key line items. The Q2 was, as anticipated by Marco, not satisfactory and far below our objectives and expectations. We lost almost $17 million. We did not generate any EBITDA. Overall, in the first half of the year, we lost $20 million. The loss in Q1 was of $3.6 million. Going on to the next page, we show that we have a closer look at the TC equivalent results of our vessels on the spot market in Q2 and H1 18. In Q2, the results of these vessels, these include both conventional and eco vessels, was, and it includes both MR1s and MR2s, was of $10,300 per day. And of course, this result is disappointing. If we look at H1, it's 11,500, slightly better, but still very low. The 10,300 is lower than in any other quarter since Q1 17, and it's possibly one of our worst quarters of the last few years. Thanks to our prudent strategy, which has not been as prudent as usual, but nonetheless, we did benefit from some sort of coverage. We had 32% of our fleet covered at almost $15,000 per day, $14,900 in the first half of this year. Our overall blended TC earnings was of $12,600 in the first half and $11,800 in Q2 18. Finally, if we go on to the next page and to compare our performance with the Clarkson's benchmark for similar type vessels, we did outperform, and that's not something we should be congratulating ourselves on, since this is mainly a function of how this average is measured. But I think what is interesting is that our spot eco vessels earned $13,000 per day and in the first half, which is not that bad as a result. It is definitely much better if we include also the non-eco vessels. So the spot TC, including both type of vessels, was 11.5, but the spot TC of only the eco vessels was $13,000 per day. So there is definitely quite a big difference if we only look at the eco vessel, which proves that our strategy to renew our fleet and to acquire these new buildings, not only because the average prices at which these vessels were acquired are still today competitive relative to the new building prices at which these same vessels could be acquired today, but also because of their outperformance relative to conventional vessel, it seems to prove that this was the right strategy. Moving on, we show our the evolution of our NAV, after peaking in December 17, it has been moving lower as a result of the losses, meaning that we have been generating, and as at the end of June, it was of $228 million, and Our shares were trading at a discount of 40% to NAV as at the end of June. And basically,
last but not least, on page 30, why invest in this today? This is the usual slide. Nothing has changed there. We still have a great fleet at historically attractive rates, at attractive prices from top-tier yards. First-class in-house technical management. We normally have top clearance with all the largest companies operating in the segment. We have vetting with them. MR1s and MR2s and all seller1s, three segments which are very popular, and they are a little bit the workhorse, all three of them, of the product market. Prudent commercial strategy. We went below our 40%, but we didn't want to lock in rates at these levels, and close presence of our customers, strong banking relationship. All our book, as Carlos has said, has been financed by, already financed the remaining four LR1s. And last but not the least, very attractive market fundamentals. We still believe that there is a strong market ahead. For sure, this today is very much of a sobering day. Q2 was totally unexpected. We're not the only one, I think, it was unexpected. I think a lot of people are going to come below consensus on their projections. So, misery likes company, but, you know, I think also that misery should also stimulate you to do better. We're starting an in-house review on our cost. We're looking at many other alternatives. However, we are positioned for recovery in the medium term, medium long term, and especially we feel confident that when that recovery will be occurring, we will be there with all the instruments we need and being able to maximize the returns at that point. I'm more or less finished, but I would welcome any kind of questions that might be from the audience. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. We kindly ask to use handsets when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question comes from Matteo Bonizzoni with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have three questions. The first one is on things that you have already detailed in the call. So basically, you have been in this business for 4 years and decades, and now we have a situation that is counterintuitive for most of market participants. So macro is relatively good. The stock of products had declined over the last months, refining activity has been decent, refining margin the same, but the spot rates for your fleet has touched new fresh low in Q2, so it's a strange situation. Just a little bit, what is your interpretation? Because if we look at the chart in the slide 18, at the end of the day in 2018-19, yes, we should have a gap between the fleet growth that is decelerating and the product bond trade that is expected to be above, but not such a gap such to, let's say, extrapolate a massive recovery of the rate. So can we imagine a situation of lower for longer rates, or do you think that really also with the IMO that is approaching, we should face a significant recovery of the rates over the next 12-18 months to a level, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 dollar per day, that is a decent level. So what can you say at this stage? And the second question is just on the financial structure coupled to the capex that you have. So you have another $116 million of capex, of which $42 million of equity portion, as you have detailed, with the 70% loan to value. So it's fair to assume that you are going to face all these capex and particularly the equity portion if the market remains depressed with further sale and lease back. That's basically the scenario that we are facing. Thanks.
Look, I think question number two, Carlos can give you a much better and more qualified answer, but Matteo, I would like to concentrate on question number one. If I understand correctly, you are asking me historically why is this happening today. Look, I think that this has been one of the toughest quarters that the industry has been going through in a long, 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 long time. Why is it happening? There's nobody who has an answer, and I can tell you also this. I think you are an analyst, you look at things. I think that this kind of quarter is coming a little bit of a surprise to everybody, not only to people in shipping, but also to all the analysts that cover the market. Nobody was expecting a great quarter, but it's been much worse than what people expected. Now, through TCs, we've been able to avoid it. We still have some good chartering people. We have tried to squeeze the last dollar out of each charter. However, this kind of market conditions has been very unpredicted. So we all found ourselves a little bit surprised by it. Why did this happen? If you ask me, I honestly know a lot of reasons. I think there's a lot of reasons for all of this, but I can't point you out to which is the main reason. Look, there is the reason that you have large ships who are being delivered, the VLs and Suezmax, the big rhythm, and they're moving big cargoes of products on the first trip, because on the first trip they can carry them out of Asia to Europe. So that creates a lot of ton miles going down for the smaller ships, and especially there's a lot of cargoes removed from the market. You're totally right. Deliveries are coming down. Inventory is going down because ships are getting scrapped. There is a positive condition. Refining margin is still good. So everything seems to be in place, but it seems that there is something that's kind of getting the market a little bit stuck. Like all these things, I believe that when you have these unforeseen events, they can't last for very long. But they're lasting long enough to generate these kind of damages on people's book. I think that we are in a good position. We have a strong support from our majority shareholder. We have a lot of assets. We still have a very good net asset value of ships that we can still do sale and lease backs because there's not much liquidity in the straight sale market. So I think that we have the tools to come over it. Actually, not I think. I'm sure that we have all the tools. The only thing that's puzzling is when is going to come the recovery and how much it should be. Personally, I think also on this point that when you have these market conditions stressed to the maximum, the lower side, normally if there is a bounce back, it's going to be a very strong bounce back. And as far as coming, I think, as you pointed out, the low sulfur, the new IMO regulations in 2020, will start already in mid-19 generating some inefficiencies, some logistical problems, because we have the fleet like ours, or the fleet that will have to be distributing the products in the different ports to be used as bunker for the ships. So I think there for sure there's going to be an improved market. Now the question is there going to be a considerable bounce back before mid of now 2019? I think as we are positioned today, end of July, beginning of August, I think August will be a tough month. July has not been an easy month. If we start seeing a September that's starting to pick up, I think probably we could still see a good Q4 and a good Q1, and then we start getting into 2019. So I think what we should really observe very much is what's going to happen in September. And look, you've all had the patience of being on this conference call so far, so I think another 3-4 months, I think, won't be asking too much. But I think the next 3-4 months are going to be kind of interesting to see how the market develops from these low points that it's reaching in Q2.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to what Marco was saying that, I mean, this is something we have stressed in the previous calls. I mean, this destocking process and the fact that the oil curve and the refined products curve is in backwardation is incentivating the destocking, and we have seen this happening very aggressively, and for some of the refined products we are already below the 5-year averages. But this creates the possibility of a much healthier market in the future, but the correction in itself is negative for us, of course, because it means that part of the consumption is being met through the stocks, which were already refined and transported, rather than through new refined products and the transportation of these products. So we have been suffering from this. We have been suffering, as Marco mentioned, from the weakness in the crude tanker and the fact that these vessels are at the margin stealing cargoes from us, and they are very big vessels, and they are stealing the cargoes on very long voyages. So that weighs quite a lot on our market. So a recovery in the crude sector would definitely be very positive for us. And a more short-term reason for the correction was also covered in our presentation when we talked about the inputs in Brazil and Mexico, and we showed that there was a large drop in imports in these two countries. In Mexico, it was very pronounced in February when imports declined by 27% relative to the previous month, and then they recovered a bit, but they're still 11% below the January 18 peak. And in Brazil, instead, the drop wasn't as pronounced, but it was there was no recovery. Imports have flattened at a lower level. So relative to the last 8 months of last year, in the first 4 months of this year, imports were 16% lower. And these were two bright spots for us because they were two markets where imports were rising very fast. We show in our presentation how imports have increased between 2007 and 2017 in Brazil, U.S. exports of petroleum products to Brazil, how they have increased, and now this figure dropped significantly. So this created a very big weak market in the U.S. Gulf, and it partly explains also why the results were unexpectedly so weak in Q2 this year, although, as Marco mentioned, we had a fleet contraction in Q2. We had more vessels demolished in Q2 than vessels delivered, which is the first time in a long time this happened. But, you know, if these trends continue, I mean, some of these trends will have to revert. And when they do revert, as Marco mentioned, they could revert and lead to a very, very strong recovery, because this is like a spring, and we have been pushing it down, but also creating the premise for a much stronger market in the future, we believe. Regarding the question on the CapEx and on the sale leasebacks, yes, indeed, it is true that we will have to cover these $42 million through sale leasebacks. After the 30th of January, we did announce the sale of an older vessel and the sale leaseback of another vessel, and together these transactions generated $14 million in cash for us, around $14 million. And we are working on other transactions at the very moment, and also hopefully over the next few weeks we will be announcing more such deals. And we are, you know, I can say the positive aspect there is twofold. On the one hand, we do see there is a market for these transactions, and it takes sometimes a while to close them. That is also because we have decided to focus on transactions which are flexible and which are relatively inexpensive. So we have done transactions mainly with Japanese investors, which are the most competitive source of capital out there. These deals with Japanese investors are not available for everyone, and it's only thanks to our good name in Japan that we are able to pursue them. But it's not a market where you can do very large deals in one go. So we do sometimes there is a time difference between our cash needs and when we are able to deliver the vessels to the new buyers and generate some cash through these sale leasebacks. And that is why and we know we can pursue such a strategy because we have a very strong controlling shareholder which is backing us, and they did so this quarter, and as they have done in the past, when they exercised their warrants in December early at a higher exercise price than the price at which the shares were trading when these warrants were exercised. So they exercised all of their warrants at the first available window. And of course, the commitment that they provided during the capital increase, where they were ready to subscribe 100% of the transaction, they didn't have to because the investors followed. But they are there for us. They seem to be there for us, and therefore that gives us some more flexibility. And it is, we believe, one of our comparative advantages.
Thanks.
The next question is from Luigi De Bellis from Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Two quick questions for me. The first one, which are the main conditions of the shareholder loan of 25 million and under which condition will be eventually converted in equity? And second question, the regulatory changes. IMO 2020 is gaining focus with an increasing number of companies that are announcing plan to install scrubbers. When and what kind of impact do you expect from the regulatory change for the sector and for this? And what kind of strategy does the company intend to take, using more expensive fuel or scrubber? Thank you.
Look, Luigi, ciao. Hi, how are you doing? Listen, Luigi, on the shareholders loan, I can give you a little bit background, but then Carlos can get a little bit more in the detail. It is a revolving facility, I think, for 3 years, so it is not unsecured. It is not junior, but it is we can repay it whenever we want, but if we can't, we have to always to give 1 year and 1 day of notice. I think then Carlos, we want to fill in the other details on that.
So this is a as Marco was saying, a revolving facility with a 3-year term, but it cannot, the controlling shareholder cannot ask for it to be reimbursed without a notice. It can only ask for it to be reimbursed with a notice of 1 year and 1 day. So it is long-term in that sense, and it is a $30 million facility. We had drawn down overall $27 million from our controlling shareholder as at the end of June, of which $25 million through this new long-term facility and $2 million through a shorter term facility which we already reimbursed to the controlling shareholder. We of course can decide to reimburse the $25 million early if we feel we don't need them anymore, and of course save the interest on that. The margin is of 2%. Above the 3 months US dollar LIBOR, and although it is a committed facility, there isn't a commitment fee. So I believe they are quite attractive terms for the MiCo International shipping. And there, I'd just like to add, there isn't any plan at the moment, and nothing in the facility itself which can lead to a conversion of this debt into equity. So just to clear that point. And then I pass over to Marco.
So Luigi, they're very, as you can see, they're very more borrower-friendly clauses than lender-friendly. So with, I think good job was done in negotiating that. On the IMO, IMO is going to have a lot of repercussions, Luigi, on both sides. I'm just going to have repercussions on the trade, and it's going to have repercussions, in my opinion, also on the rates. On the trade, I think the problem is going to be that a lot of these new low sulfur products will have to be distributed around the world with not many refineries producing them. So we'll have to be, there's going to be an increase in ton mile, and there's going to be more utilization of ships. Second thing, there's going to be a loss of efficiency in the market, which is always positive for product tankers. So there's all these collateral effects which will be happening. On the fact that you were saying about scrubber, we are sitting on the fence looking at what's happening, just to be starting to look at the ratio. We have the last LR1 that should be delivered next year, which is going to be installed a scrubber on that ship. So just to start seeing how it works. The company is starting developing a lot of experience in scrubbers, especially because we do the new building supervision for other owners where they have scrubbers installed. So I think we're climbing very fast on the learning curve. On the issue of scrubbers, I personally think, if you ask my personal opinion, I personally think that there's going to be some benefits for them. They're going to be limited in time, and it's the time limit of the benefit which is going to be meaning if it was a good idea or a bad idea. The world is divided in believers and agnostics, and there are very important people on both camps. You know, this morning we're discussing, it seems that Maersk, who's a very big operator of ships, they have not been installing one scrubber, and they said they don't want to install them. So, you know, there's as many people you find who wants to install scrubbers as people do not want to find them. We took a more prudent road. We've been building, we've been supervising new builds for people with scrubbers. We know how they work, and we've been installing one on our last LR1. So we're taking very much a balanced approach to the whole thing. As far as repercussions, I told you so far I can only see positive things coming out the IMO implementation.
Thank you. Just one question. Can we assume in Q3 spot rate very close to second quarter with an awfully pick up in Q4? This is a realistic scenario.
Luigi, Q3, July was not a good month, August will start tomorrow, and September in 1 month. See, I think here it is very difficult to make projections. The only thing that I can tell you is that we're here, we're planning to remain here, and especially we're planning to be in a condition when market changes to give together all the benefits, including the arrears that we didn't take at that moment. I think for a company like ours, we have the advantage for the reasons I told you, the good relationship with banks, what Carlos told you about the support from the majority shareholder. We are one of the few companies who can look with optimism to the future, also going through these very dark days.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Look, thank you very much for being here. I would just like to close this this conference for thanking you for being here. For we try to explain if you want to give us a call later on. And also to tell you, there is a very famous quote of a very famous Englishman that was Winston Churchill, who during the darkest period of World War II, they asked him what he was thinking, and he said, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going. So I think that's what we're exactly what we are going to do. We'll keep going, we're not going to stop, and we'll be in a strong position as soon as the market turns around. Of this, I can promise you about this. Thank you very much.